Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Battagliano, and joining us now in studio is our own Steve Paisley Jordahl.
Good morning and afternoon, everybody.
Rocking that purple Paisley.
I told him this morning, I like it.
Purple Paisley.
Purple Paisley, yeah. Purple Paisley.
Yeah. Steve doing his best Prince there, the artist formerly known as. Guys, I'm thinking I need a job that I can fail at, which I can be paid millions of dollars to get fired from. Oh. I'm thinking that's...
You mean coaching LSU? Is that what you mean?
Well, coaching college football, Division I college football, period, not just LSU.
I don't know about you, but if I was coaching it, I'd be failing big time. So
I think that's going to stop. What we're talking about is these enormous contract buyouts that these coaches are getting. And I don't blame them. They're getting all they can. What are they going to do, say no?
Right.
When a school offers them a contract that they get all their money that they were going to get if they get fired.
Yeah.
So
if they fail.
If they fail, then they don't have to work. And for the, you know what I'm saying? It's the most bizarre setup I've ever heard of in terms of an employer situation. But these schools, a lot of big schools now are firing their coaches in the middle of the year, their football coaches, and then having to pay them off, having to pay their contracts off.
What was the line in Moneyball where the guy, they brought in a high paid veteran and everything, and he said, I don't have to listen to you. I know what I'm doing. He says, let me tell you where you're at. The Yankees are paying us so that you don't have to play for them.
I forget the player's name. It was Justice, David Justice.
David Justice.
It was David Justice. Yeah. Listen, we're talking. We'll get into something probably a little more newsworthy, folks. But Brian Kelly, who left Notre Dame, my favorite team.
Scorned you.
It scorned,
the
Notre
fans,
Dame, and I rooted for his epic failure at LSU each and every Saturday.
That's what sports does to people.
That's right.
Makes them lose their Christianity.
Probably a nice guy, but it didn't matter. But his record at LSU was 34-14. That's not abysmal.
No, but that's not LSU.
But that's not LSU.
It's also in the SEC.
The pressure on these coaches. So to your point, you get offered whatever, $60 million, whatever they offered them initially. You get offered it, you say yes, because chances are.
I think the problem is with the schools and their athletic administrations, whoever decides to give a contract like that. But what happens is, you say, well, why would you do something like that? What happens is, it's so highly competitive that if school A.
Yeah.
Offers a coach a certain amount of money, then school B needs to keep up, they feel like. So they got to get a coach also that's high profile and a winner and can move their program to the top of the country. So it's just
it's
gotten crazy out of hand.
I can't imagine that a college would pay a coach so much that it loses money even if it wins a national champion. I think this talks to how much a school makes if it wins a national championship.
LSU, if I'm not mistaken, they also have to pay another former coach.
Oh, Ed Orgeron, who won a national championship.
Yes. So they're in.
Told him you're being fired and. We're going to pay you so much money if you go quietly, I think, Ed Orgeron. And he said, hey, just show me which door you want me to go out.
How do you know that's what he said?
That was the rumor story anyway.
Yeah.
I don't know how you know how what Ed Orgeron said. You can never understand the guy.
He had a thick Cajun accent. He fit LSU like a T.
He did.
Ultimately, he didn't win enough. He won
Nick
a national championship, and 2 years later, he's gone.
Nick Saban won a national championship at LSU, too.
He did.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
Before going on to dominate at
Alabama.
Yeah.
Before getting out of the game because NIL and transfer portals and everything. I think that's another reason.
I don't.
That's another reason why they have to pay coaches so much to put up with all this kind of stuff.
Yeah. Anyway, folks, thank you for those who are listening who don't like football or don't like college football. Thank you for letting us have our moment.
Yeah.
Don't like college football.
I'm sure there's some out there. But listen, I had them when I pastored. People who didn't like football who would say people who like football are idolaters. And I would say, you show me what you like.
Right.
And anyway.
Right. I know. I agree.
I'm not
so
overly sensitive about
this. How much
this.
Did they have to pay you when they fired you from that church is what I want to know.
Yeah. What was your contract? What did it call for when you got fired?
Listen, I have a non-disclosure
agreement.
Oh,
okay. Okay. You reached an agreement? Okay. Huh?
You will, a non-disclosure
you will
agreement.
Give the, you will give the lawnmower back to the church.
The lawnmower.
Right?
No, we had one of our elders used to mow the grass. Listen. It was,
tell that story that you haven't told in a long time, because we used to talk about how the pastors in the old days had yes. to live in parsonages. Because I grew up in a parsonage till I was 13 or 14, and my dad said he was a Methodist and they had parsonage, but he said, you know what? Talking to the church, the new church, he said, I'm gonna buy my own house.
Yeah,
I don't. No disrespect, but I don't want to live in a rented house.
Yeah, you gotta have your, because at some point you retire.
That's
what
my dad said. One day I'm gonna retire and
gotta have somewhere to live.
Gotta have somewhere to live, and so plus I don't want my family living in the parsonage that the church owns all the time.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he had that approach, but that was novel. That would have been back in the mid-70s, and if you told a church you didn't want to live in their parsonage, a lot of the parishioners took offense to that.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? So but no,
you were telling me about
what happened to you. You were serving the church, right?
Yeah, I was an interim pastor. This is my wife's home church. Okay, so down in Central Mississippi.
Let's don't give any names though.
No, okay? I'm not.
Okay.
Because I love the people there. And so this is the one and only time we lived in a parsonage because I was interim. And I was telling Tim about how people at the church considered the parsonage, even if you're living in it, to be theirs. And I walked out on a Saturday morning, and there was someone from the church getting the hose off the faucet. And I said, hey, brother, what are you doing? He said, I'm borrowing the hose. I said, why? He said, I pay tithes.
Oh,
I'll bring
gosh.
It back.
I can't believe he said that. Huh?
Yeah, that's.
Would you stand there stunned? Even
what
for
was I supposed
Italian?
To do? It's like I can't call the cops. It's technically not my hose.
So he took the hose. Did he bring it back?
He did. Yeah.
First, I thought now, some reason I had it in my mind he had taken he borrowed the lawnmower.
No, I had my own lawnmower. Now if he'd come in and try to take the George Foreman grill, we might have had more than words. Okay.
Oh,
first
man.
Church I ever took as a music pastor out of seminary, we lived in the parsonage, and they still charge us rent.
Ooh,
it
that's
was
brutal.
Bad.
Oh, also yeah. they had, some of these parsonages had furniture that was you
from
know
the 60s.
Yeah, broken down. Huh?
I don't remember the furniture being that bad.
After my wife and I were there.
You need to be thankful, brother,
yes.
that the church is providing for you.
Yeah, they what was the old joke that deacons or elders, whatever, they opened their business meeting by, Lord, you keep the pastor humble, we'll keep him poor. My wife informed me after that time, short time,
right.
like a year, maybe a year and a half in the parsonage. My wife informed me, no more parsonages. I'm with you, Ed, to the ends of the earth.
Right.
As
no
long
more parsonage.
As we don't wind up in a parsonage.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I'll still be married to you, but we'll be living separately.
What did y'all do when you were on the mission field, Steve?
We had a house that we rented.
Yeah.
It was Madagascar. The main city of Madagascar was fairly
modern.
Fairly modern. I mean, for... It'd be like living in Mexico City or something. We had it was a livable place. Not gotcha. Bad.
You know, I this is what my wife always tells me. I probably shouldn't have been that specific talking about where the church was located.
Right.
Because those folks are dear friends of mine. Some of them will be lifelong friends. They weren't the ones that came to get the hose.
And he brought
it's
the
not
hose.
Their fault.
He did bring the hose
he brought
back.
Brought the hose
I
back.
I give it to him.
Yeah.
He brought the hose back. Did he hook it back up?
You know,
you remember that?
We're talking way back in the 80s.
You know, you need to leave it where you bring it back to where you found it.
Yeah.
You know, that's
I don't remember.
Girl Scouts.
Yeah.
Isn't that the Girl Scouts?
I was never a Girl Scout, although I imagine there are some boys who are currently Girl Scouts.
I don't think that's Girl Scout motto.
If you borrow it.
No, I don't think that's – I think that's just an old –
just being a decent
an old saying.
Yeah.
Whatever. All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. You know, leave it better than you found it.
Yes.
That principle.
Right.
It's one of the scouting people.
One of those scouting groups.
Say that. All right. All right, Steve, what's your first news story for us there?
There has been a shakeup at the British Broadcasting Corporation, the BBC.
BBC.
It's Director General and Editor in Chief, and its CEO, Deborah Turnus, the CEO, Tim Davey, the Editor in Chief, have both resigned after the BBC was caught doctoring some video of Donald Trump during January 6th, where they made it sound like he was encouraging his people to fight, as opposed to what he actually said. I'm going to play you a short little clip. It has what the first is what the BBC played, and the second is what actually happens. Cut 17.
We're going to walk down to the Capitol, and I'll be there with you, and we fight. We're going to walk down to the Capitol, and we're going to cheer on our brave senators and congressmen and women.
He also said that we're going to go peacefully and legally protest.
That's disgusting.
Yeah.
That the BBC, they may be the largest news agency in the world. I don't know. Reuters is there, and maybe the Associated Press, but pardon me. You have the BBC now. Obviously they dominate Britain, but still their news services worldwide. And they did it. That was a documentary they did.
It was.
And they intentionally spliced together President Trump's word to make him look like you heard it.
Yeah.
To make him seem like he was saying go to the Capitol and fight.
Right.
When he didn't say that at all, he said the second one you played, which was the accurate one.
Now, I don't know if the fact that Donald Trump is threatening to sue the BBC for $1 billion had anything to do with this.
He's been pretty successful
with
his lawsuits.
They also have cited coverage of the transgender issue and coverage of the Gaza war, mishandling both of those.
No, they're lefties. The BBC, they're lefties. It's hard to find any big news agencies anymore that aren't left-leaning on issues. Yeah. I'm glad that at least somebody had to pay the price. A couple people were fired for doing that.
Well, no, they resigned.
They
say they left voluntarily.
Well,
now I think you mentioned her, Deborah Turnus. She's the CEO of BBC News. She also resigned along with Tim Davey. But she said, I want to be absolutely clear. Recent allegations that BBC News is institutionally biased are wrong. So she resigned but still defended BBC News, saying that they're not institutionally biased, but that in this particular case, I guess the offense was so egregious. I think they are probably institutionally biased, but once you're in that echo chamber, you don't know you're biased because everyone around you has the same view and viewpoints.
Yeah.
But I hadn't thought about this, Steve, but your point about Trump suing them may very well be a part of this spate of resignations.
He has fared well, as you guys say, in those suits here, at least on this side of the
public. Well, I mean, look, the fact that they absolutely cut up his speech to make it look like he was advocating violence or allegedly advocating violence is proof that this was...
That feels like...
They were intent on making him look as bad as possible.
Yeah, feel like...
Next story, Steve.
All right. In the wake of the end of the government shutdown, a lot of Democrats are saying that they're going to kill the filibuster if they get the chance, and Republicans are saying maybe we should do it first. Here's the battle. I want to play you something from James Carville, who is talking about fixing the Supreme Court, and to do this, they'd have to nuke the filibuster. Listen to what he has to say is coming. Cut 16.
I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. A Democrat is going to be elected in 2028. You know that. I know that. It's going to be a Democratic House. It's going to be a Democratic Senate. The Democratic president is going to announce a special transition advisory committee on the reform of the Supreme Court, that we could have our third branch of government has lost the faith and trust of American people. And they're going to recommend that the number of Supreme Court justices go from 9 to 13. That's going to happen, people. That's going to happen to you. And a Democratic Senate and House are going to pass it, and the Democratic president is going to sign it, because they have to do an intervention so we can have a Supreme Court that the American people trust again. So just keep that in the back of your mind. And I would bet a lot of money that that's what's going to happen. A lot.
Okay.
Now, explain who he was.
James Carville is a Democrat strategist.
And he was in the Clinton administration.
During the Clinton administration, he married to conservative Marilyn Marley Matlin. But yeah. I don't know if she's...
Well, he didn't have a good track record of predictions recently. If you look back at some of the things he's predicted would happen.
Could be. Do you doubt that the Democrats would nuke the filibuster if they had the chance?
Okay.
I think so. Go ahead.
This is when people throw things at me. I'm my own teammates. They turn against me. Some of our listeners will turn against me because they'll say, what are you thinking?
Yeah.
I'm not so sure, because the Democrats had a chance last time. Now, would the vast majority of senators vote to do away with the filibuster on the Democrat side? Yes. But you may have enough Joe Manchins. It only takes a handful of them to disagree, as we've seen.
John Fetterman.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know. But both sides, Republicans and Democrats, okay, I'm not talking about the ideas of the parties right now. I'm talking about the process. But both sides want to ditch the filibuster when it's preventing them from instituting their policy, okay? And then when the roles are reversed, then they're in support of the filibuster, because it's the only tool they have to prevent the imposition of the other team's policy. Okay, does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's mutually assured
destruction.
You're just rank hypocrites, both of them, when they flip this. Not all of them. There are some senators who are principled on keeping or getting rid of the filibuster. I understand the wisdom. There is some wisdom in the filibuster. For this reason, it keeps a simple majority from just ramming through any kind of crazy nutty policy that you want to institute that affects the whole country.
Right.
Okay. On the other hand, and Tim 2.0 seems to favor this, and that is, listen, it should be the will of the majority. You shouldn't have to have a, quote, supermajority to pass legislation, because that isn't the way the Constitution was set up in the first place. So you just deal with the consequences of a country that's deeply divided, and that's how it is. The filibuster policy, again, was not in the Constitution. It was put in there by the Senate itself to keep where you would have to at least show some 60 votes, I think it is.
It originally was 66.
60.
Yeah.
But at least you have to have 50 and then plus 10. So you have to have some support theoretically from the other party, at least some minimal support to get legislation passed. That's the idea.
I would be in favor of the filibuster if it was a real filibuster.
Okay.
In other words, where you had to talk.
Okay.
And everyone else was captive in the Senate. And now what they do is they just announce, all right, we're doing filibuster. Let's all go have lunch.
Right.
You know, so the filibuster from Mr. Smith goes to Washington.
Right.
Where the Senate had to sit there and listen.
Right.
Okay. That, to me, is valuable. But it's valuable in part because it prevents the Senate from just saying, we're never going to vote for what your bill is.
Right.
And, well, like the, with the shutdown. Okay. So I would be in favor of the filibuster if they actually had to speak and then they couldn't, then they had to vote.
Okay. This has been a real problem for, I think it was President Bush, George W., and then for Obama. Remember, Obama got so frustrated he couldn't get anything passed. Remember, he did this speech where he said, well, I'll tell you what, I have a phone and a pen.
Yeah.
Meaning I'll just sign executive orders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And after that, then Biden did the auto pen, yeah. You know. And now Trump just has probably shattered a record of executive orders. So the presidency, whoever's been president, Democrat or Republican, has gotten very frustrated with the logjam because our country's 50-50,
yeah.
Right? That's just the way it is. But so they get frustrated, and then they start just signing executive orders.
Because everywhere. Congress is dysfunctional, because they can't get anything done.
But that's because of the voters.
Well,
it's 50-50 across the country.
We could talk about, and I don't want to get way off the beaten path here in terms of members of Congress, their only job, their most important job, is getting reelected. But because Congress is dysfunctional with these huge spending, you know, omnibus spending bills, all that kind of stuff.
What are they called?
Omnibus
spending bills,
yeah, omnibus. Where you don't have a bill on transportation.
Right.
Bill.
So just throw them all in there together.
Throw them all in there together. Everyone's protected. We're going to vote for everything. Right. And because Congress is dysfunctional for a number of reasons, that's kind of warped the executive branch.
Yeah.
Where the now presidents, to get anything done, have to do it by executive order.
Yeah.
The system is broken. I don't know how to get it fixed.
Okay. Well, we're counting on you.
Well, I'll come up with something by tomorrow.
Come up with something, please.
Yeah.
All right, Steve. We got a minute to go here.
All right. Do we have time to play the Alex or the Russell Brand? This is Russell Brand was on with Alex Jones and decided to present the gospel before they got kind of crazy on the interview. But let's listen to that cut 15.
You sound and look way more powerful than you were before. So I'm saying, how is it moving from the devil, which you weren't constantly serving, but moving to Christ? What is the difference?
Ecclesiastes. For in much wisdom is much grief, and he that increaseth knowledge increaseth sorrow. Yeah, right. It's painful to wake up. It's not just joyful, the embrace of Christ and the love of the Lamb. There is also a great pain in it. Can I do this thing first? Because you
sure.
A minute ago, Alex, said
you were with the devil,
right? And that sounds very vivid to people. And that's not what it's like. Because it's not like I was attending satanic ceremonies.
No, but you just slip into it.
It's self. The word is self. If you are worshipping yourself, the devil has you. You can only avoid the devil by remaining in Christ.
That's good preaching there.
Mm-hmm. That was Russell Brand. He's a former comedian and social commentator and what, actor? Maybe?
Yeah.
Anyway, he evidently, you know, when some of these celebrities have, quote, conversions, you wonder, are they doing it for a particular reason, but he sounds like he's a genuine convert.
He's certainly taken it to the lengths most people.
He's a very smart man.
Yeah.
Very smart.
You said that about me, haven't you?
I have. You're a very smart man, too.
Thank you. All right. Same is true of you.
Well, thank you.
And
Steve.
Thank you.
And Brent.
And Brent. Yeah,
smart
everybody's
man.
A winner here.
Cole Green.
Yeah.
Smart man.
Everybody gets a trophy. All right. We are out.
Don't forget, it's Hernando Cortex's day.
Right. Look him up. We'll see you back here tomorrow, everybody. Have a great afternoon.